From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with David Windsor. First this morning, we speak with senior editor at Glamour magazine, Stephanie McNeil. She will let us in on the secret behind influencers and the $16 billion industry of content creation. Then Wild Women Tribe's founder, Renee Huang, will be joining us in the studio to talk about some upcoming community events and mindful adventures for empowered women. All this coming up this hour on The Mountain Life here on KPCW Park City. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm David Windsor.
Now, there are those among us who have no idea what an influencer is, others who are strongly influenced by influencers, and those who actually are influencers in our listening audience. What is this world about and how did it all start? We spend hours every day indulging in Instagram's infinite scroll. Influencers didn't exist 15 years ago, but today these tastemakers impact how we cook, consume, parent, decorate, think, and live. And despite their prevalence in our lives, what goes on behind that perfectly curated Instagram grid we obsess over most largely remains a mystery. Until now, until Stephanie McNeil, our guest. She's a senior editor at Glamour magazine and joins us now to talk about her new book, Swipe Up for More, Inside the Unfiltered Lives of Influencers. Stephanie, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, it is funny. I wanted to put in the intro and recognize that there are people out there in our listening audience, and you know, it could be our parents, it could be us, who do not come in contact at all with influencers.
Well, I think that even if some of your listeners think they don't follow influencers or haven't been influenced by influencers, I would argue that almost every form of public persona now is influenced by influencers. So even if your listeners might not think that they traditionally follow an influencer, they might follow an author or a radio personality or a TV personality who acts very similarly to an influencer online because the influencer model has been taken by so many industries as a form of self-promotion and publicity. But an influencer, in the simplest terms, in the way that I describe it in the book, is a content creator who primarily seeks a sustained relationship with their audience. So as opposed to trying to go super viral or trying to have a smash hit YouTube video or a smash hit TikTok, these are people that are probably most analogous to a traditional magazine where they have people who almost act as subscribers and readers who trust their recommendations, who come back to them again and again and shop their links because they have a connection with the influencer and kind of that parasocial relationship where they want to be influenced by them.
It's interesting that I was just looking through Myrna Valerio's Instagram feed and looking at the comments in her posts, and I'll ask you to talk about Myrna because she's amazing. So many of the comments said, "Where did you get that jacket? What is that jacket? Those shoes look really great. What are those?" And I thought, is this so curated that everything that an influencer is doing is signaling to the consumer, to the audience, that you really need to follow what this influencer is doing because you build such a loyal brand that the consumer wants to do everything that the influencer is doing using?
I think what you're seeing is pure organic influencing in action. You know, at the most pure level, that is what an influencer is supposed to be doing. Myrna is an amazing person. She's an amazing athlete. She's an amazing motivational speaker, but she is what I would call a niche content creator where she has built a platform for herself started out as a running Instagram and a running blog. And now it's really a holistic love of the outdoors, sports, Instagram, where she has over 100,000 people who, you know, really rely on her for really, I don't know, like an almost kind of the mountain life, like ethos, like you're describing. She lives in Vermont and, you know, she does mountain biking, she skis, she runs, she hikes. And so what you're witnessing on her account is her followers are people who also enjoy the things that she promotes on her account. So they're runners, they're hikers, they're people who really love the outdoors, they love skiing, they love being out in the wilderness. And so she is someone who, you know, the traditional influencer is really supposed to be, there's this phrase, the friend in your smart friend in your pocket, where they are just like you. They're someone that you could be friends with. They're someone who you have similar interests to, but they have all of the best tips and tricks. So they have the best products, or they, if you've been looking, for example, a jacket that you can wear outside when it's raining to do outdoor sports, they're going to have one that you really want. And you're going to trust that recommendation because you trust them. And you know, because you have this relationship with them online, you know that they are trustworthy. So for someone who's following Myrna, they look at her and she's someone who they relate to, they even look up to in a sense. And so if they see her out hiking and they see she has a waterproof jacket on, they say to themselves, oh, she probably has a great recommendation for a waterproof jacket. And then bam, there you go. That's the whole influencer industry in a nutshell.
Very interesting. I mean, the influencer industry is such a vast industry, and there's so many influencers, from whether it's politics or clothing or food or sports or anything like that. So I understand it's about building the relationship with your followers, but is there something in general that becomes like a secret sauce that all these influencers are doing that is creating the buzz around their specific channel? Or is there no real rhyme or reason to how these individuals become popular?
I think that most people believe that the hardest part of being an influencer is gaining that initial following. And while that is difficult, and it is difficult, especially now, to break out, there are these kind of random fluke moments where someone can just be in the right place at the right time and get a million followers in an instant. I mean, that definitely does happen, and that is kind of random and luck. But I think that the actual hardest part of being an influencer is maintaining that platform and actually making it into a sustained business where you can sell things, where you can have advertisers who want to work with you long term because they see the return on investment. They see that if they advertise with you, their products will be sold. So a good way to think about this is, a couple of years ago, if you went on The Bachelor, you pretty much were guaranteed minted as an influencer. It was this really short span where, for some reason, everyone who went on The Bachelor, even people who got kicked off in week like 7, were able to get a million followers. And it's been really interesting to watch who has been able to actually maintain that and who has not. You know, it's really easy if you're in that kind of situation to all of a sudden wake up with 500,000 people, but eventually, if you don't have that, if you aren't able to build that relationship where people actually want to keep following you and want to listen to you and want to buy products from you, you can't be an influencer long term. So I think that is actually the hardest part. And I think that across the board does require a certain level of business savvy. It's not just something that can just happen to you.
You hit the nail on the head for me right there with the business savvy. I used to work in the grocery store industry, and getting on the shelf was the easy part, but staying on the shelf was the really hard part. And how could you sustain the turnover of that product? And so to that point, there's a lot of, in that world, you know, you're shifting your products, you're creating new ideas, your new marketing campaigns. Is the influencer themselves, are they having to shift and morph per se to what society's requiring at this time? Or is that relationship that they just need to keep building the whole key to this success?
I think that the relationship is extremely key to building the success, because I think think if you think about it, not from a business perspective, but from a personal perspective, I don't know if you guys follow any influencers, but there are influencers who I genuinely, when they post a product, it's not just that I like the product, it's that I like them enough that I genuinely want to buy from them. You know, if it's a question of, for example, Prime Day is coming up and every influencer will post Prime Day. You know, it's this huge thing. They make a ton of money off affiliates from Prime Day. I genuinely on Prime Day go to the influencers that I like and click through their link specifically because I want to support them. So I think that it's not, you know, if you're someone who you have 100,000 followers, but none of them are willing to do that for you or feel that connection to you, that's going to be a really hard business to maintain.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're speaking with Stephanie McNeil. She's written a book about influencers. It's called Swipe Up for More, Inside the Unfiltered Lives of Influencers. And Stephanie, I am sure that in all the time that you have been sort of studying this world of influencers, you have answered many questions. And I wonder if you get, if the question you get most often is, come on, how much do these influencers make? It's incredible when you read or hear about some of the, you know, the most successful influencers. Of course, there are a million influencers out there who are not making the big money, but what are these, what are they making? What does Myrna make?
They are making a lot of money. You know, I've straight up asked a couple of influencers, like everyone asks me this all the time. So I have to ask, like, how much are you making a year? And, you know, they're not going to tell me that, but they'll give me anecdotes. You know, Myrna at one point, when she started doing influencing, she was a teacher. And at one point she was offered a contract where she would have made for one day of work, almost the entirety of her annual teaching salary in one day. Mm-hmm. And that is really incredible if you think about it, because not only is this something where people can make a lot of money, but it's very democratized. You know, it's not just the people who people pick and choose, you know, on the highest level of, you know, media or publishing. These are really, anyone can become an influencer. And so, I mean, I can throw a couple of more statistics at you. There is a platform called Like to Know It, which is the biggest platform where people can make affiliate links, which is essentially shoppable links. And that platform has been around for about a decade. And in that time, on just using that revenue stream, which is one of several revenue streams that influencers can use, they have 130 women who have become millionaires alone just off that one revenue stream, which is really incredible if you think about it, that I can't think of any other industry that has minted so many self-made female millionaires in such a short span of time. It's pretty remarkable. And then one more, I guess, juicy statistic I'll throw your way is, I talked to an influencer manager who really brokers these brand deals for influencers. And so if you're on Instagram and you see a post where people say sponsored or ad, that means they're working with a brand. And so before these brand deals, most influencers who have a couple hundred thousand followers are making at the absolute minimum $10,000 per post. And most are making three or four times that per post. That's really the absolute kind of floor if you're a fairly successful influencer. So you can see how that can add up. You know, they have the brand deal revenue stream, they have the affiliate linking revenue stream. And if you do two sponsored posts a month, that's 20 grand per month right there. So it adds up. It definitely adds up.
That's incredible. Well, we have to talk about how much these influencers are putting their very private lives into a very public platform. So nothing is private anymore. And when that happens, when you're putting yourself out there so much, there have to be detractors and haters and trolls and people out there who, for some unknown reason, like to spend their time hating on others. And I know this is a big element that you talk about in your book. What is going on there, and how do influencers handle that?
I think that intimacy that I was speaking about earlier is a double-edged sword, where many influencers, it's really analogous to walking on a tightrope, where you can do something really incredible. You can build an incredible business. You can make a lot of money. You can work for yourself. You can really have the quote unquote American dream. But because your relationship with your followers is so intimate, it can really backfire. And you really have to walk a fine line between authenticity and business savvy and showing parts of yourself, but not too much. And the general public asks influencers to share a lot about themselves. One of the people I interviewed in my book, Caitlin Covington, you know, really did not want to share, especially in the beginning. She didn't really have an interest in sharing deep personal things about herself, because the few personal things she did share were immediately picked apart on the internet. You know, there are, I don't know if everyone knows this, but there are these big online forums where people just make fun of, gossip about, criticize, snark on influencers. And, you know, she had posted a few things about her boyfriend and people really tore her to shreds. And she spent many years trying just to focus on fashion and beauty and wellness and really not talk about herself. But as time has gone on, that's become not possible, because followers really want to feel that parasocial relationship, really want to feel that they know you, that they know what's going on inside your head, that they understand why you're making the decisions that they make. So it's kind of a little bit of a devil's bargain. You really do have to give up a certain amount of your private life and offer yourself to the masses to be torn down, essentially. And, you know, people are very, very hard on influencers, you know, sometimes rightfully so. Sometimes it's genuine criticism. Sometimes it's just making fun of them. And it's really become a thing where if this is what you want to do, that is something that you're going to have to accept.
So that being said, do these influencers have a team of individuals around them that are helping facilitate and filter these comments and make sure that the influencer, for lack of a better word, is protected? Or are the healthier ones not reading the comments? Are they not engaging? What are they doing to mitigate these problems? Because you're right, it is a dark, just angry world out there that can be very attacking.
Most of them say they don't read the comments about them on these snark forums, but it's not just the snark forums. It's, you know, many people get really nasty messages and comments. And I think one thing that I talk about in the book is the sheer volume of DMs that these people get is kind of unfathomable, you know, thousands a day. So many influencers do have people who not only are there to filter out the negative comments, but their entire job is just to answer direct messages on Instagram, because it's physically impossible for the influencer themselves to do so. So that is a pretty common thing in the industry, and it's kind of a two-part reasoning. One, just because it's not something that you could spend all day answering DMs if you're an influencer. So it's a nice, easy thing to outsource, but it also does create a little bit of a barrier where if someone writes a really horrible message to the influencer, they don't need to see it. It doesn't need to ruin their day.
Well, Stephanie, we live in Utah, so we have to discuss, yes. I know you've taken a trip out here, and the Mormon mommy influencers, and what is the obsession with these individuals, and why were you so intrigued by it as well?
I think that in general, many people, before there was this explosion of Mormon mommy bloggers on the internet, were not very familiar with the Mormon church and the Mormon community and the Mormon lifestyle. I grew up on the West Coast, so I'm very familiar with the LDS church, but since moving out to the East Coast, I've realized that many, many people have never met someone who is LDS, especially out here, which I found really surprising because there was an LDS church in my neighborhood and I knew a ton of kids who were LDS. So I think that has something to do with it, but I think that there was just such a proliferation of bloggers and mommy bloggers who were Mormon because it was really this nice symbiotic relationship for a really long time between these really young entrepreneurial mothers who were LDS, who, you know, went to college and were really motivated, but, you know, were staying home and having kids. And then they started writing these blogs and becoming influencers. And because they had this entrepreneurial spirit, they really started building these businesses. And then brands started to see these like young, beautiful mothers. And they said, wow, this seems like a really great person to you know, hawk our wares, so to speak. So I think it just kind of snowballed from there, where I interview one of the original mommy bloggers, one of the subjects of my book. And, you know, she said it was just almost like the Silicon Valley, where if everyone you know is starting a business, you might start to say, maybe I could start a business too. And it's the same thing. You know, if everyone on your street is trying to become a Mormon mommy blogger and you're like, well, I'm Mormon, I have kids, maybe I'll try that too. And it really just snowballed to where, you know, she told me at her kid's school, there's so many kids whose parents are bloggers and influencers. Almost like I'd imagine, you know, here in New York City, it's not unusual to have parents who are in finance, or in my area of Brooklyn, I know a lot of kids' parents are in media. So yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon for sure.
It definitely is. And also just, I mean, being a parent is hard. Being a stay-at-home mom is really hard. And looking at these women who make it their career and have really a lot of kids, you know, the average LDS family has a lot more kids than, you know, the rest of Americans, basically, and to see what they do and make it look sort of easy as they're doing it must be pretty fascinating for the world out there who, you know, someone who is home from their job on maternity leave and is saying, wow, what, how am I going to do this? And then they see someone who has 5, 6, 7 kids doing it and making it look fun and easy would be, you know, it'd be very alluring. And I see that. And that's, you know, kind of to wrap this up, I wanted to mention that the world of influencers, it seems to me, is so much about real people showing what they do. It's not, I mean, yes, it's celebrities. Celebrities are influencers and probably the original influencers, but most of these influencers that you're talking about in your book are just regular people who are doing it. And it's very alluring to feel like you can relate to someone who's just the average person. Is that, do you think how it, that forms really the attraction?
Absolutely. I think if you really just kind of put it in simple terms, influencers are almost like the most popular girl at your school, where you like her, maybe you're friends with her, but you kind of want to be her and you kind of want to copy what she does. And that's, I think, it's this really interesting blend of real person, but celebrity in a microcosm, right? And I think that's basically what an influencer is. You know, the girl where you're at school and you're like, I want her shoes, I want her coat, I want her dress. That's an influencer, but the internet.
Yeah, you must have had such a fun time writing the book. It's called Swipe Up for More: Inside the Unfiltered Lives of Influencers. Our guest is Stephanie McNeil. What's next for you, Stephanie?
You know, I just started at Glamour Magazine a few months ago and I had a baby 10 months ago. So it's been a bit of a whirlwind. So what's next for me is hopefully
calming down.
Some more articles for Glamour, maybe some rest and relaxation, but yeah, I'm excited for the future for sure.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Live.
Thank you so much.
From the studios of KPCW in Park City, welcome back to The Mountain Live. I'm David Windsor.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Let's face it, women love to gather. And when they gather intentionally, curated to have fun, experience adventure, and empower each other in the outdoors, their experience becomes rich and valuable to well-being. Renee Huang, the owner and founder of Wild Women Tribe, joins us to talk about some creative upcoming events and partnerships, collaborations the tribe invites you to. Renee Huang, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Hey, David and Lynn, thanks for having me back.
Thanks for joining us. So for the listeners that don't particularly know about this Wild Women Tribe, tell us a little bit about what it is.
Okay, it's a group that I actually started probably more than 5 years ago at this point, when I was going through some transformation and crossroads in my own life, and I was really seeking relationships of more depth in my life. And we live in this beautiful place with amazing access to the outdoors. And so I really wanted to create a group where we could go outside, play in nature, and really ground down into the topics and things that really mean a lot to us, using nature as kind of like this soothing, grounding container.
I love that. And right before we started the show, you were saying how this is now your full-time gig. And because of it, you get to do a lot of experimenting and figuring out what's working and what the community is receiving. And so what are the things in the upcoming events that you've either added or that have worked so well that you've put back in?
Yeah, so the original concept that I started with was these wanders. I call them wanders because we're just kind of like meandering around on different trails. And they're also kind of symbolic of the wandering we can do in our own minds. And so those have continued pretty much at regularity once a month or so in partnership with other coaches and facilitators. And so that's been a great way to highlight a different woman in the community who's doing something with her own small business and highlight a topic that really matters. And so I've got an upcoming partnership with Nikki McGee, who is a yogi and a fly fisherwoman and a mountain guide. And we are fly fishing on the Provo River. So that's going to be in a couple weekends on June 17th. She'll be teaching yoga and we'll be having brunch outside and doing a mindful hike. And then she'll actually take us on the river and do some casting exercises around the concept of flow. So like reading the river of life and what is flowing in and how to pivot and really make those decisions from a place of security and a place of feeling good and not putting up resistance that will block you from catching and seeing that fish.
I love it how every action we do, every sport we do, there's always a metaphor for life. And what a good one, really, you know, fly fishing and flow. I have to say, you sent me some photos of some of your recent things or upcoming events and adventures, and looking at a bunch of women standing in the river fly fishing really appealed to me. And I thought, you know, who would think about going out with a group of women and doing that in particular? And so I guess it leads me to this question of how do you figure out what the community wants and what women are looking for? Are you just listening to your friends? Are you sending out, you know, surveys? How do you do it?
A lot of it is driven by what I want to explore and I want to do. And then I pay a lot of attention on social media and just what the trends are. There's a lot of cacao circles and full moon, new moon women's circles going on right now. And so it's a good indication of kind of what people are open to right now. And then I do try to do some surveys on social media. Responses vary, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. people are into it or they'll respond and then they won't sign up. And so it's kind of an ongoing experiment. But I think what you've touched upon, like getting together, gathering with a group of women to do an activity that you're not used to, that's really the crux of things, you know, stepping outside your comfort zone, trying something new, learning about yourself in a way that maybe you haven't before, because either you haven't had the interest or you've been intimidated or you've said, oh, that's not for me. So it's really about creating these opportunities for us to grow, because let's face it, transformation doesn't happen when we're in our comfort zone and when we don't try something new. So it's about providing those opportunities.
Transformation doesn't happen when we're in our comfort zone. I love that. It's a good thing to carry throughout your day. And I used to have this mantra, you know, do one thing that scares you every single day. And when you do that, it really does open up the boundaries that we put on ourselves. David and I were talking in the green room before you got here about this spectrum of activities, it seems like you're kind of blending outdoor activities and sport that may be on a, while you say it's wander, it's also, you know, could be sort of a fitness or exposing people to a new sport or activity. And on the other end, you're doing these sort of ceremonial, spiritual, woo-woo things. How do you combine those in a way that feels really authentic?
I think the way that we do anything in life, you know, by not trying to be something that we're not. So the woo-woo and the spiritual, it's meant to be fun, and it's meant to be something that is inspiring and exciting and fun and exploratory. And so for me, you know, as I kind of discovered it on my own journey, I realized there's so many different ways to approach all of this. And so it's not supposed to be an instruction manual of how to be more hippie in your life, right? It's more of like, what resonates with you? Try something out, figure out a combination that is a little weird, you know, or a little different, and that's okay. I think giving people permission to actually explore themselves in a way that feels real and authentic is what it's all about and what the group is all about, and giving women that opportunity to meet each other as well and be like, oh yeah, you're into cooking and like shooting at the gun range and, you know, gathering wildflowers, me too.
You're not wrong. What a great opportunity, because as Lynn mentioned, to see all these women in the river fishing is one of those things that not a lot of people get out to do, because it requires a lot of equipment. You got to know the locations. And so getting individuals out into an element that they're not particularly used to can be really healthy in that sense, because it just triggers the mind in a different way. So you have a lot of new coaches, retreat coaches, that are doing certain things within this program. Can you highlight some of these coaches and what they're doing?
Sure. I've partnered with so many women in this community over the years. There's another program that is just on the cusp of launching. I'm finalizing dates with them, and it's going to be like mini wanders. So the wanders that I normally do are like 5 hours on the weekend. Sometimes it cuts into family time. But these mini wanders with these coaches are like 2-hour little mini bites of an experience. And they include yoga practitioners in town like Ann Sargent and Randy Joe, who Randy Joe normally does mindfulness and yoga for kids in the school system. And Ann Sargent herself is quite woo-woo. She does a lot of guiding in the outdoors and integrates astrology and new moon and full moon kind of circles into her practice. And so we will get out on the trails and we will hike, and then we will actually stop wherever we are and do a little bit of yoga and movement and mindfulness. Some other people I'm talking to, Miranda Lyle is a exercise physiologist who does functional movement at a bunch of studios around town. So we will do like a Thursday evening experience, which also involves like mobility on the trails. There's quite a few women who are in studios, but also with their own practices. And so this whole idea, this whole trail series, is really to combine them all together, make it really accessible for the women who want to just drop in for a quick 2 hours, and then also highlight what these phenomenal coaches in our community are doing.
Love that. Switching gears a little bit, mm-hmm. Lynn and I just did an interview last week, and it was all about gratitude and writing gratitude lists and just writing a gratitude letter to individuals. And I can only imagine in this new realm that you've entered in this profession and leaving your job and seeing all the transformations in these women, it has to be very gratifying. And I'm curious about whether it's a gratitude letter or something. What are the events or the exercises that you guys have done that have you seen the most transformation, not only in individuals, but yourself? And basically, what are you grateful for in those events?
Yeah, gratitude and mindfulness is something that I think has become so much of a buzzword and a practice, especially during the pandemic and coming out of it. And it's really one of the anchor points of our experiences. Like, we have mindfulness and gratitude practices woven throughout. So we're out in nature, we're doing these practices, we're doing these connective exercises. One of them, which is the most powerful and which is also one of the most uncomfortable for most women, is eye gazing. So we will drop down, we'll sit on the trail, we'll face a woman who we don't know, and I'll literally start the stopwatch, and we'll sit there for 2 minutes looking at each other without speaking. And that's not necessarily a gratitude practice, but it really is a presence practice that we don't get to do every day. Like, we pass each other in cars and in the grocery store, and we don't look at each other. And so to have that moment of connection with someone else who you don't know is like so powerful. And it often ends in tears and laughter and women saying, wow, 2 minutes felt like an eternity. And I feel so connected to this person who I haven't even exchanged words with in front of me. And so those little exercises show, I think, a great deal about the capacity of the human spirit and what we can all do and how community is all around us within our reach. We also do lots of journaling practices that are guided. My background as a journalist lends itself well to using the written word and the spoken word. And I really believe strongly in the ability that we all have to reset, reframe, and shift our mind using the power of words, thoughts, and beliefs. And so we do a lot of journal writing where we write letters to limiting beliefs or fears that we have. We set them on fire, like you were saying, Lynn, in a ceremonial way, and really impart women with those practices that they can take home and that they can integrate into everyday life.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Renee Huang. She's the founder and owner of Wild Women Tribe. And it's funny, I have done that exercise before, the eye gazing, as you call it. And it's true, you look at a person you've never spoken to in the eye. We don't often really engage the eyes of other people, do we? We're looking down a lot, looking at our phones a lot. And you do feel connected with someone. I was thinking as you were talking about that particular activity about trying to convey various emotions to the other person through your eyes while you're doing it and seeing it, if you can guess what those emotions are. Because isn't it, I often marvel at really great actors when you see, it's just a look in their eye that says, that conveys an emotion. You go, well, how do we do that? Our eyes are tell the story, don't they?
Well, and after those exercises, we often will do these affirmations where it's not a self-affirmation, but it's telling the woman in front of you, you are beautiful, you are strong, like kind of reflecting what you see. And it's so interesting to see how you can read a person even without exchanging words.
The conversation that we had in the first half of the hour about influencers, and this one influencer in particular, Myrna Valerio, the Myrnavader, she is I don't know the correct term these days, we have to be very careful with our language, but a plus size person who is a huge advocate for getting out there no matter what size you are and experiencing outdoors. And she's a big ultra, like she's an ultra runner. It's amazing. And she has drawn such a loyal following because what it does is it anchors her audience to who she is as a person who doesn't have any limits, no limiting beliefs about who she is and how she can't go out and do that sort of thing. And I think that that's, you know, in a sense what you're doing as well in Wild Women Tribe is you are giving women this place to connect. And I don't know why, I just keep thinking about Myrna Valerio. She would be a really fun person to have come and collaborate with you. But and she does love Utah. She comes here and runs these trails. And so I guess my question, you know, for you is how challenging is it to really find those connections and make them feel really authentic to your groups?
I think it's so easy. I mean, connection is, I think, a reflection of where you are in your own life. So if you open yourself up to it, you can connect to anyone, right? And I think one of the things with the group, sometimes people say, well, what is the age group? Or what is the type of woman who comes? And I say, you know, it's actually every age and every type of woman. And one of the reasons why when I expanded into retreats, I did camping retreats, because there's something very equalizing about being in a tent on the ground. You know, you don't have to know someone's socioeconomic background necessarily. I mean, you can see if there's like a more expensive sleeping bag or something, but it really is an equalizer that allows us all to connect in an authentic way. And so the women who come, I mean, sometimes in my retreats, I've had women who are like in their early 20s to their late 60s and even early 70s. And so you've got these like multi-generational 4 or 5 different decades of woman, and it makes it so broad and fascinating, because if we're, you know, if we're in our 40s, we can definitely relate to the woman in her 20s who's like just finishing school and about to embark on her life and her career, and she's got all these worries. And we can also relate to the woman in her 60s who was like an empty nester and, you know, maybe taking up new hobbies. And so I really feel like there is a diversity across connection points that when we open ourselves up to them, we can learn so much. And so really the group is about that, you know, opening yourself up. You don't know who you're going to connect to, so why would you only gather with people who are like you?
You're right. The camping and sleeping on the ground is definitely the great equalizer to the ego and the things that you're used to, the shelter, the status, the money, the car, all that stuff. And so when you're out there, my favorite part about you, Renee, is it's clear that you get emotional about this. It's clear that this means a lot to you, and this is something that you really care about. And I know that's going to translate when you're with these women. And I have, as we spoke before, last time we interviewed you, about my wife has gone on this journey. And so I know from personal experience of what it can do to someone. And I really believe that your emotional connection with this is a huge part of that. And going back to the limiting beliefs, is there an underlying theme that you're seeing come out with the limiting beliefs with these women? Is it lack of education or money or status or self-love? Is with the limiting beliefs that you're seeing, is there an underlying theme, or is everyone across the board?
I think limiting beliefs at their core come back to beliefs about self and worthiness and safety. And so, yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think one of the most resonant ones is just about if I'm worthy of love. Mm. You know, that comes up a lot with women. Mm. And the idea of loving oneself and then being able to translate that on a level that has boundaries and that, you know, doesn't allow a certain access to self that isn't deserving. Yeah, all of the reflections back to self, I think, are the ones that are the most alive in us.
Yeah, it's what makes us all humans, I guess, the feeling that you need love or more or something. I mean, we all have those emotions. Tell us a little bit about the events that are coming up. I know there's one on June 17th and June 25th, and then September there's one the 6th through the 10th. Can you give us the audience a little bit more about what's going to be happening in these events?
Yeah, so the 17th is the Wander with Nikki McGee, the fly fishing wander. That's 5 hours long, and we probably need registrations by early next week in order to just make sure all the spots are accounted for. The 25th is an ongoing monthly partnership with Mountain Town Music. I don't know if you recall, during the pandemic, we launched this sound series really to highlight community-activated mental health healing. And we've highlighted and partnered with different sound healers in the community and down in Salt Lake. And this one is with Pamela LaLuce, and it is an outdoor sound bath. Pamela has the hugest collection of like crystal healing bowls that I've ever seen. And she's a gifted, gifted sound healer. Last time she had an event at the shop, I think it was in the winter time, there were like 70 people that sold out. She's an amazing practitioner. And that one's in Peoa. Wooden Shoe Park. It's $30. You got to get tickets in advance as well. I mentioned the mini trail series that I'm about to launch. And so people will have to go to my website and sign up and kind of get updates for that. And then in September, I'm partnering with 4 other amazing coaches in town for a four-night, five-day retreat. So it's a transformational yoga retreat with horses and shamanic energy medicine. So that one is in registration right now, and our early bird rate expires, or it goes up on June 15th.
Wow. Okay, June 17th. Again, it is the Accessing Flow. It's the fly fishing and yoga on the Provo River. And it is a six-hour experience. It's $185 per person for the whole day. And you still have spots available for that. June 25th is that sound bath. So I'm picturing we're all sitting outside at Wooden Shoe Park, which is just a beautiful little place out in Piowa. And we're rubbing the...
Well, we're not. Pamela is taking us through the journey. And like the thing with sound bowls is they're frequency-based healing tools. And so they have different tones to them, and you can actually feel them kind of go through your different chakras, and they activate different things, and a lot of emotions come up. So yeah, we're just enjoying, and she is the one who is leading us through the journey.
Okay, I'm glad I asked, because I was getting ready to put my wand around the healing bowl.
These bowls are worth like tens of thousands of dollars. Wow. Yeah.
And they're not easy to operate either.
No. It looks very easy because the sound that comes out is like really gentle and beautiful.
Resonant.
But yeah.
That's neat. So that's $30 a person. And is that an evening
It's
thing?
From 6 till 8.
Yeah. 6 till 8. And June 25th, is that a weekday or weekend?
It's a weekend. It's either a Saturday or a Sunday. I think it's a Sunday.
Okay.
And if you're into these things, the equinox is on the 21st, and so she'll be harnessing equinox energy because it's just a few days later.
Yes. Oh, we're on the downslope on June 25th. The days are getting shorter. Every time I say that, I feel like such a glass is half empty, half full, whatever that is. But I do. It's almost like I love the June 21st for the solstice, and then afterwards, I start to feel kind of sad about the days getting shorter. The Mini Wander Hike Series. So this is, unfortunately, I won't be able to attend because it's every Wednesday, 9:30 to 11:30, where I'm sitting right here. But it's July through September. So this, if you have never experienced Wild Women Tribe before, what a great way to dip your toe in the water, right?
Dip your toe in the water. Hopefully the kids are at camp or you can drop them off at a play date. We're going to have dogs come along on these ones because the trails that we choose are public access. And yeah, so it'll be a fun way to just try it out and get outdoors.
Okay. Well, the September 6th through 10th, the five-day retreat in Oakley, you talked about partnering with these four different women. And a couple of almost all of these women we've spoken to on the show before, but why don't you take us through? Let's start with Sophia Maletti. She's a yoga teacher and a holistic chef.
Yes. So Sophia and I actually have been partnering a lot with Mountain Town Music because she was brought on as their wellness coordinator in the Sound Bath series. And she's just this fascinating, amazing human who is so diverse. You know, she teaches yoga and she's into cooking. She grew up like in her parents' restaurant at the bottom of Main Street. Mm-hmm. And she's also into like functional mobility movements. So it's like yoga, but really in alignment with how your body and your joints move. And so she will be teaching morning yoga and doing all of the meals for the retreat, which is out in Oakley on a horse ranch, like the most beautiful horse ranch. And then Danielle Bryan is the founder and owner of Shamanic Twist out in Camas, which is a studio, but she's also created this shamanic journey 12-month program, which really guides people through getting to know their energy centers through the earth, through nature. And so she's like an ideal partner for me. We've done a couple wanders together. And then who else do I have?
Alejandra Lara.
Alejandra Lara, who is she is an equine assisted learning therapist and specialist, and she's nationally known. She does these horse therapy experiences with veterans and with women and trauma recovering patients, and she will be leading three different sessions during this retreat with a herd of horses at this ranch. Chris Getzey is the owner of the ranch. She breeds horses, but then she also has a rescue program with Alejandra called Reins. And Reins is a nonprofit that is devoted to healing horses and humans together. And so they rescue horses that are often on their way to kill pens, or have been abused, and she brings them onto the ranch, and then they do this program that Alejandra will lead, which is, it's not riding the horses, but it's about presencing. It's about learning yourself through communication with another sentient being who doesn't speak English or words, you know? And so it's just this amazing, magical experience of sinking in with, like, these animals who can read our energy so well.
I'm terrified of horses, if I'm being honest, and not that I'm welcome to the women's tribe, but I don't think I would be joining that one if I was.
Well, that would be a perfect opportunity to move you right out of your comfort zone.
Oh, ladies, it's some bad experiences we can talk about off air. Lynn and I have been doing a lot of interviews with individuals, and obviously the microdosing, the drugs in general have been a huge part of therapy and healing. And so is this something that you guys might incorporate at one time, or does that require a different license, or how does that work as far as a healing retreat, including psychedelics and stuff?
Well, plant medicine, it's so funny. It's like one of those terms that none of us would have talked about 5 years ago. And I think if it's legal here in Park City in Utah one day, you know, that would be amazing. The other option would be one of the international retreats that I do, like either in Costa Rica or Mexico. So yeah, that has definitely come up. People have asked me, and I'll follow the law. And
so, but in order to do that, you'd have to facilitate like a shaman of that particular, like the horse healer or someone like that. You'd have to, accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, you would have to partner with someone who's licensed in that modality, and it would have to be legally approved by the state or the country that you're in.
Interesting. Well, we'll have to find more about that. So anything else, Renee, that we can, we have just a couple minutes left, and I'm just curious, is there anything else that, for a new listener that hasn't experienced this before, what are some things that are common underlying questions or themes that women have coming into this, or reserves that for not signing up? And is there anything you can tell the audience a little bit more about this organization?
I think it's really just an invitation to step outside of your comfort zone and try something new, meet some new people, and know that you're in great company with kind-hearted women who are very accepting and curious and open-minded. And so I think what is a barrier to entry for a lot of us is, do I know someone? Will I make friends? Will I be accepted? You know, and this group is very good at being open and accepting and inviting. And so I would encourage anyone who has even an inkling of an interest to reach out if they want to jump on a call with me for the retreat, because, you know, it's a big commitment, 4 nights, 5 days. I'm happy to jump on a discovery call. And actually with the retreat, we have spots in the retreat center as well as local day passes. So if you really can't stay overnight and you want a lower price point, you can get a day pass or even a tent camping spot. So there's lots of different entry points.
Lots to explore. Renee Huang, Wild Women Tribe, thank you so much for joining us again on The Mountain Life. Always great to see you.
Thank you, guys.